I just feel so strongly that kids that have that entrepreneurial mindset, that aren't afraid to fail, they're not afraid to take risks, that they see opportunities where other people see problems, that they will be more successful in life regardless of the path that they choose.
Hello and welcome to The Daily Helping with Dr. Richard Schuster. Food for the brain, knowledge from the experts, tools to win at life. I'm your host, Dr. Richard. Whoever you are, wherever you're from, and whatever you do, this is the show that is going to help you become the best version of yourself. Each episode, you will hear from some of the most amazing, talented, and successful people on the planet who followed their passions and strive to help others. Join our movement to get 1 million people each day to commit acts of kindness for others. Together, we're going to make the world a better place. Are you ready? Because it's time for your Daily Helping. Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Daily Helping Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Richard, and I am so excited to share our guest with you today. His name is Brian Weisfeld, and he is a thought leader in creativity and innovation. He's also an author, a passionate advocate for youth entrepreneurship, and he's been building businesses his entire life. As a kid, he bought gummy bears and hired his friends to sell them. As an adult, he helped build well-known billion-dollar companies, including IMAX and Coupons.com. Inspired by watching his daughter sell Girl Scout cookies, Brian co-authored several traditionally published books to inspire kids to start their first business and learn to think like entrepreneurs. His books have been recognized by both the Junior Library Guild and the American Library Association. He's also the founder of the Startup Squad Foundation, a nonprofit dedicated to teaching entrepreneurship to girls from underserved communities. Working with kids opened Brian's eyes to their remarkable creativity, and drawing on his professional experiences, he now inspires adults and organizations to be more creative and innovative by learning to think like 10-year-olds. Brian has spoken to thousands of kids and adults across 3 continents during his career and was featured on media outlets such as Good Morning America for his work. Brian, I am so excited about our show today. Welcome to The Daily Helping. It is awesome to have you with us today.
I am excited to be helping every day, especially today.
Well, we appreciate that. And you know, there was a lot in your story, right? Selling gummy bears, you know, so it feels like to me, you're one of these people that just kind of always had that entrepreneurial spirit in you.
Yeah, I was always interested in business. I was always looking at new things, trying different things, both as a kid and as an adult. And it's really helped me not worry about what's coming next, just live for today and be willing to take different avenues should they appear.
Was that an influence in your household that you modeled, or was that just you were born with it and popped out of the womb and you just had that spirit in you?
It's a good question. I think my father was an accountant and sort of a business manager. So there was always a little bit of business going on, but I think more of it, I just took it on myself. I just wanted to earn money. I just wanted to, I enjoyed the act of selling things. I enjoyed learning about different businesses. As a kid, one of my favorite things was when the Forbes list of billionaires came out every year. That was my favorite thing to read, not because I aspired to be a billionaire, but I just loved reading all the little snippets about how people made their money. Like, what did they do? And learning about all these different businesses. And it was just, that was one of my always things. I was always interested in business from the time that I lied about my age to get my first real job. And I think 15 or maybe even 14 to what I'm doing today.
So how old were you approximately when you started looking at the Forbes billionaire list? That's a wild thing.
I would have to have been a young teen. I would say probably somewhere in the 13 to 14 year old range once I found out about it. And as I said, it wasn't a material thing. It was just an ability to sit down and, wow, that's really cool. This person started the business that sells auto parts or does whatever it is. And that was what fascinated me.
And so let's flash forward a little bit. You spent your foundational years in your youth hawking gummy bears and I didn't read this in your bio, but I know you sold mixtapes, probably violated some copyright laws there, but that's okay. I think the statute of limitation is well behind us on that. But when you got out of college, then what did the world look like for you? What was the next step in your journey?
So it was really interesting because when I was in college, I applied to law schools because at the time, law schools almost had become 17th grade. It was sort of what you did when you graduated college. A lot of this is sort of 1990. A lot of people went to law school, and I realized that I didn't know what people did for a living. Right? You're a lawyer. You're an accountant. You're an investment banker. You get to your office. You sit down at your desk, and then what? And I realized that while going to law school would be a wonderful education, it wasn't 3 more years in a classroom wasn't going to help me figure out what people did. So I took a job as an investment banker, which gave me the opportunity to work with lawyers and accountants and companies and financial experts and really just get a sense of what people did and what I enjoyed doing. And it became very obvious to me that the law was not something I would have enjoyed doing. And so I quickly put that to the side. But I realized what I enjoyed was building things and building companies. And so that was my path. And so from investment banking, I went to work for two guys, and they were looking for companies to acquire. And the day I joined, they said, "We're looking at buying this company called IMAX, and bids are due on Thursday." And so very quickly, we became an operating team. The two guys that I worked for became the co-CEOs of IMAX after we acquired it. And I was just their right hand. They used to refer to me as the blank in Scrabble. Whatever the most area of greatest need every year was, is what they would throw me into. And so I had an amazing experience very early in my career.
And so one of the things we talked about before we recorded was how IMAX, traditionally, you'd go to a natural science museum and you'd watch an IMAX movie about frogs in the Amazon or something. So how did the idea evolve to turn that into something that was consumer facing in a mass market kind of a way?
So it's really interesting because it does tie back to some of the work that I do now in thinking like a 10-year-old, where it's a way of looking at things through fresh eyes, not worrying about what has happened historically, but as if you're seeing it for the first time, that beginner's mindset of just looking at something differently. And the guys that I worked for, they saw people walk out of that movie theater having just seen an IMAX film as about frogs in the Amazon and saying, "Wow, that was an amazing experience." And so they thought, well, why does it just have to be a fish film or a movie about frogs in a museum? Why can't it be Spider-Man at the local multiplex? And so that was the vision. And obviously that's what the company has become today. And one of the two guys is actually still running the company as its CEO.
So you mentioned, and I love that we're getting here because fresh eyes, seeing things through the eyes of a child. When I read your bio, we talked about seeing your kids selling their Girl Scout cookies. That kind of started this light bulb for you about this childlike enthusiasm and this innocent viewpoint, which you talk to people all over the world about. But it sounds like you were already doing that at the IMAX. So it sounds like this was kind of part of who you were, but then observing your kids, unless I've messed the timeline up here, Brian, seeing your kids did that was kind of the light bulb moment where like, oh, okay. And that's what shifted your focus. Am I on the money there or totally way off?
So it's interesting because there's another stop along the way. So as you said, yeah, the earlier part of my career was helping companies build businesses. I was the chief operating officer of coupons.com and helped to grow that from a sort of a mid-stage startup to a company that was getting ready to go public. But the middle stage was, I've got two daughters, and at the time my girls were 8 and 6, and I saw my older daughter, as you said, selling Girl Scout cookies. And I just realized that these were life lessons that she was learning. She was learning how to think like an entrepreneur. She was taking a risk. She was dealing with rejection. She was the shy, introverted kid was looking people in the eye and talking to strangers and building self-confidence. And I just thought I wanted more kids to have that experience, especially girls, because I also at the same time was getting frustrated with a lot of the princess, fairy, rainbow, unicorn nonsense that was peddled to girls. And So that inspired me to create this movement to get kids, especially girls, interested in starting that first business. Not that they should all grow up to be entrepreneurs, but I just feel so strongly that kids that have that entrepreneurial mindset, that aren't afraid to fail, they're not afraid to take risks, that they see opportunities where other people see problems, that they will be more successful in life regardless of the path that they choose. And so that led to this journey of spending the last, you know, 7 or so years creating books for kids about entrepreneurship, talking to kids at schools and libraries all across the United States about starting businesses, and having this nonprofit arm where we teach entrepreneurship to girls in underserved communities. And the number one thing that comes out of it is these girls feel more self-confident. They feel more self-esteem. They feel less shy. We're changing the trajectory of their lives through entrepreneurship, not because of the money that they're making, but through the experience they're having. And these kids are, some of these kids I've seen come up with these business ideas that are just out of this world. There's no way an adult would ever think of these things. And it made me realize that there is this creativity and this innovation and this curiosity and this fearlessness and this world of limitless possibilities that we all have when we're 10 years old, but we lose it as we get older. And knowing from my corporate experience how much creativity and innovation are needed, that if we could recapture some of that inner 10-year-old, we will, first of all, have more fun and be more creative and sort of reach our potential as adults. But also, if we can do that in the form of an organization and a company, then that company is going to be more likely to reach their goals and be more innovative, which is needed more than ever today. So there's a personal aspect to it of how we can all reach our potential by tapping into that inner 10-year-old. And then there's a corporate aspect about how companies can be more successful if they can get their employees to do the same thing.
And I know you speak to kids and you speak to corporations. So there's a happy middle ground there. I think this makes perfect sense, right? Like, you're a kid and you say, I want to be an astronaut when I grow up, or I want to be a professional wrestler. And at some point, somebody is going to tell you, that's stupid, you're too small, you're not good at math. Like, so society sort of beats that out of us, right? Like, and it may not even be malicious, right? It just may be, you know, our parents or people in our sphere of influence who are saying to us in not the best way, yeah, you really don't have that skill set, right? And so we lose that childlike wonderment. You say to get it back. I totally agree. I'm curious, and I know a lot of people listening to this are, if people are nodding along with us saying, yeah, you know, Brian, that sounds great. I'd love to get back that kind of inner youth that I had, you know, how do you do it? What are some of the techniques you teach people how they can reconnect with their inner 10-year-old?
There's two things in terms of that evolution as adults. I think there's a nature part and a nurture part. Some of it goes to, I spent a lot of time learning about brain science and childhood development and why we lose some of those things. But also there's the nurture aspect, as you said, of it just gets beaten out of you, right? They eventually, and I've done this with my own kids. Okay, enough questions, right? Stop with the whys. We're just going to do it. And so you sort of get trained to stop asking questions and to be less curious. And you, as adults, we do start to build up boundaries to our thinking about what we think is possible, whereas kids don't have those boundaries. They're just living in a world of limitless possibilities. They don't care what's been done before or what's been tried. It's just, I've got this really cool idea, I want to go forward to it. So I would say, you know, sort of three things that people can do, frankly, today to recapture that. One is start to change your routine. Start to see things differently. If it's your drive to work a different way, walk to your office a different way, do an exercise routine in a different way. Just start to see different influences and challenge your assumptions. Question why your rituals are your rituals and try to do things a different way, right? Kids have no rituals. They just go out and they do it. And I think when we get into these routines, it sort of puts our brain into a different state where it's just a status quo, right? How many times have you driven home from your office and you have no recollection of how you got there, right? It's just autopilot. But if you take a different route, or maybe you take public transportation, now all of a sudden your brain is alive and you're experiencing different things.
Hey guys, Dr. Richard here. For the past 7 years, I've been privileged to bring you incredible guests who are changing the world and can help you become the best version of yourself. I'm really excited to share with you a new quiz that I created based on my clinical training that will curate for you a custom list of my top episodes and actionable strategies to help you wherever you are on your journey. All you need to do is go to drrichardschuster.com to take it, and it's 100% free. You'll be taking the next step on the journey to unlocking the power of you, and I can't wait to see where you'll go. And the science backs this up, Brian. What you're talking about is cognitive flexibility. And the brain, really every system in our body, but the brain in particular, it likes homeostasis, right? So it likes sameness. It's going to try and bring us back to that 72 degree setting no matter what. So you're saying, no, let's change the thermostat, take a different way home. I love this because we're starting to create new neural pathways, particularly if this becomes a habit for us. And our minds now are open to seeing things differently.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's the first one, is change your routine. As you said, rewire your brain a little bit, get that little bit of neural rebellion going. The second one goes back to brain science, which is that, and you know this far better than I do, Dr. Richard, but brains don't come up with new ideas out of the blue. Brains make new connections between different things that you've experienced. So to come up with more new ideas, you have to experience more new things. So what I encourage people to do is add new inputs, do something different, take a class, listen to it, watch a different show, go out to lunch or coffee with someone who can teach you something new, exercise, or have a dance party on your own. Just do new things to bring new information into your brain. One of the stories I love to tell is there was a woman who worked at a London hospital, was watching a Formula One race on TV. She saw the way the pit crew worked as a team and came up with a new process for her hospital that reduced errors by 50%. So you never know where these brainstorms are going to come from, but you need new inputs to experience them. So watch a new show, meet someone new, listen to a different kind of music. All those different things can just add new inputs into your brain that will allow your brain to make different connections and come up with new ideas.
I love this. I'm sure you've got a YouTube video to your own personal dance party, which I'm happy to link to in the show notes. Somebody challenged me to do an exercise many years ago to watch an AFI film list of the top 100 movies ever made. But the key differentiator there, not just watch them, but research what was going on in the world at the time that movie came out and view it through that lens. And I had a very different perspective, especially watching things like, you know, Casablanca and Gone with the Wind and other things like that. So again, we're talking about just kind of giving your brain a little bit of a shock, right? We're gonna mix it up. We're gonna do some different things. So I'm loving this, Brian. So okay, we're trying new things. We're doing our dance parties. We're driving home different ways. We're just, you know, raining havoc on the system. What's the next step? What else can we do to really tap into that inner childhood?
Well, so interestingly, let's go back to the brain. And part of it is tapping into a different part of your brain. And so when you're focused on a task, right, if you're sitting, you're trying to solve a problem or come up with a new idea, your brain's executive control functions, that's what keeps you focused and logical on tasks. So that when I'm sitting here talking to you about innovation, I don't start thinking about my laundry list or my grocery list. But there is a part of your brain called the default mode network. And that's the part that kicks in when you're not focused specifically on a task. So have you ever had an aha moment when you're in the shower or going for a walk or doing something totally unrelated to the problem that you're trying to solve? That's that default mode network kicking in. And so that's a very powerful part of your brain that makes odd connections that your rational brain wouldn't make. Your rational brain says, here's the problem I'm trying to solve. Well, here's the other way, all the ways that I've solved it in the past, or here's all the ways that I've seen other people solve it. But it's through that default mode network that you can come up with those different connections. And so one of the things that I tell people is, if you're stuck on a problem, don't keep pounding away at it. Just think about the problem you're trying to solve and then do something totally different. Go for a walk, work in the garden, take a shower, but don't listen to a podcast unless it's this one, or do something that would otherwise distract you. You just want to plant the seed of the opportunity or the problem that you're trying to solve in your brain, and then just let that default mode network take over and see where it comes to you. I actually, in my shower, I keep a waterproof pad and pencil, because so often I'm having these ideas in the shower, and so I have a place to jot them down. Or I've heard some people will keep a dry erase marker in their shower, and they'll just jot things down on the glass as they come to them. And so that's another powerful way. It's counterintuitive, because you think, well, I want to solve a problem, so I really want to concentrate and focus on this problem. But it's through tapping into a different part of your brain and thinking about things differently that will really help you to be more creative and be more innovative and come up with ideas just out of the blue.
I love this. And, you know, science speaks to this. There's another component which happens at night, that our brains actually try and solve our most complex problems that we're facing in our sleep. So there's a good amount of data that says, you know, the alarm goes off and you wake up and you're like, I got it. That's part of this. But that process gets helped along by doing what you're talking about in this step.
Yeah. And to your point, there's a famous example that I share a lot, which is Keith Richards of the Rolling Stones came up with the guitar riff for Satisfaction when he had just woken up. He was still half asleep and it just came to him. And so, you know, that's the sort of thing. It just, that's one of the most fertile times for your mind, when you're just drifting off to sleep or when you've just woken up. And so try to take advantage of that and use it as best you can.
I wonder, you know, you've been teaching people how to connect with this childlike wonderment for a long time. How does somebody, I mean, obviously, other than feeling, I feel different, I feel more zestful, but how do you measure it? How do you measure the impact in your life? You know, how do you operationalize it? How do you quantify it? You know, I'm curious if you're aware of what that data looks like, or how to take that piece.
I think there's two parts to it. One is, do you feel like you are generating more creative ideas and more innovative ideas? And are you coming up with things that you wouldn't have otherwise done in the past? Are you more willing to try different things? Are you less afraid to test something and have it fail? So there are those ideas, but then there's also just the part of it that is less quantitative of, do I feel more adventurous? Am I more willing to say yes to something that I would have said no to? Am I looking at things a little differently? And so I think there's both the specific part about I'm coming up with better ideas and I'm being more innovative, versus I'm more open to the world around me. I'm more curious. I'm more fearless. I have more of a growth mindset. I'm less concerned about what I've done in the past and more open to things that I can do in the future.
And I would imagine less concerned about what other people say about how I think or feel about something.
Yeah, and that's a huge one. You know, we talked about, you know, one of the differences between the kids and the adults is, right, the kids aren't, they ask questions. They're not worried about judgment. They're not worried about what other people think. But as adults, that's one of the first things that comes up. Oh, I don't want to ask that question because maybe it's a dumb question. Or I don't want to mention that idea because maybe someone's already thought of that. And so one of the biggest things is we filter our own ideas. And so that it hinders our curiosity because of that fear and because of those filters. And that's part of getting back to that 10-year-old, is just asking questions and not being afraid of what the repercussions are going to be.
I love this. Do you have a favorite story or two of somebody who's gone through, you know, one of your trainings, your workshops, and come out of this on the other end, and how it's impacted their life?
I don't necessarily have specifics, but I have done sort of corporate workshops, and people have said, you know, our company is more creative and innovative the next day because we're not filtering ourselves and we're being more honest and open. And I would have to think that the individuals that are doing that are feeling better about themselves as well.
That's excellent. So something I've been thinking about too, as we're having this conversation and you're teaching us techniques we can use to become more innovative, to tap into our inner youth, to look at things, fresh set of eyes differently. Many of us are going to stop listening to this podcast and get on ChatGPT and start asking it questions. So, you know, I'm curious, given your focus and what you do, what are your thoughts on AI? And, you know, I mean, there's good and bad with everything. So I'm not going to ask you if you think it's bad or good, but I'm going to ask you how you can leverage it to really enhance your ability to be more innovative and creative.
Yeah, it is a wonderful creativity starter. It's a great way to think of, you know, hey, I'm thinking about doing something. Give me, you know, 10 different ways I can do it. It's a great way to start. But you have to use it, in my mind, you have to use it just as that. It's a starting point. And then that thing that's sitting on your shoulders, these amazing brains that we have, take that information and now layer on top of it. I think, you know, one of the biggest mistakes is relying on AI as the end result and not using it as a starting point. And I think the ability, it can help you be more creative by helping providing a starting point. I know I am much better working off of an existing idea or an existing document than I am off a blank piece of paper. So I will quite often say, you know, say to AI, this is what I'm thinking of doing. How would you do it? And that, for me, is a great way to just get my brain started in thinking about all the other different ways that I can do it. It's a lot easier for me than a blank piece of paper. But I think a huge error is saying, you know, asking AI, what can I do? And it's going to spit you back a response. And then you go off and do it without applying your own science to it. I think that it's a wonderful tool, but it shouldn't be an end result.
I appreciate the way you phrase that, because I think, and I worry that kids are going to use it and lose that creative spark because they're going to rely on it too heavily.
Just to add one more thing. So I was in, it's funny, you know, I talk to conferences of, you know, hundreds of adults and thousands of adults. And some people say to me, you know, don't you get nervous? Are you afraid to do that? And I said, no, I've spoken to 100 fifth graders in a room. That's a much tougher audience. And so I was just talking to about 100 on that point. I was talking about 100 fifth graders about entrepreneurship. This is probably 2 or 3 weeks ago. And I got a lot of questions about AI and, you know, can AI just do this for me and those sorts of things. And one of the things I explained to them is, you know, imagine that you own the local bookstore in town. Our local bookstore here in Los Altos is called Linden Tree Books. Wonderful. Got to give them a plug. If you own Linden Tree and you hired a high school kid to work for you, the day they show up, you wouldn't just hand them the keys and say, here you go and leave, right? You give them a little task and then you sort of judge how well they do at it. And then maybe you give them a little bit more and then you do it, but you sort of, and that's the way I think of AI as well, which is I think of them as an intern. They're going to provide me with lots of different information, but they don't have the background and expertise that I have. And so use it as that starting point. They're a wonderful intern, an incredible helper, but you're not going to hand them the keys to your business.
Makes perfect sense. Brian, I've loved our conversation today. As you know, I wrap up every episode by asking my guests just this one question, and that is, what is your biggest helping? That one most important takeaway you'd like somebody to walk away with after hearing our conversation today.
Every person listening at one point was 10 years old, right? That wildly creative, curious, fearless, imaginative version of you is still in there. So let it out and be a better you.
Perfect. Brian, if people want to learn more about you online, where can they go?
BrianWeisfeld.com. It talks all about my work with adults and then my work with kids and entrepreneurship is at thestartupsquad.com and yourtheboss.com.
Perfect. And we'll have everything Brian Weisfeld linked to the show notes at drrichardschuster.com. Brian, I've loved our conversation. Thank you so much for spending some time with us today.
Thank you, Dr. Richard. And thanks for all you do for everyone out there.
I appreciate that very much. And I appreciate each and every one of you as well who took time out of your day to listen to this conversation. If you liked it, if you're inspired, if you're going to go do those things and connect with your 10-year-old self, go give us a follow and a 5-star review on the podcast app of your choice, because this is what helps other people find the show. But most importantly, go out there today and do something nice for somebody else, even if you don't know who they are, and post in your feeds using the hashtag MyDailyHelping, because the happiest people are those that help others.